Well, folks don't just start out at as a White House correspondent. You know, that's something you move up to. And one of the ways you get there in the corporate media is, in fact, by showing that you are not going to, in a regular way, ask challenging, difficult questions of officials. People who ask those questions eventually get moved off that beat. So you're exactly right. I think there is a timidity among those reporters who are covering government, who are in Washington, D.C. Access is everything to them. And particularly the Bush administration has been extremely overt in saying that, you know, if you ask questions that bother them, like Dana Milbank of the Washington Post, for example, well, at the next press conference, maybe we won't even call on you for a question. So there is a kind of timidity, a kind of fearfulness among those journalists who really we would like to be the most courageous journalists. These are the ones who are supposed to be representing the public and speaking to the most powerful people in the country. Instead, we see a kind of almost a Stockholm syndrome, where they seem to identify with these leaders. They seem almost more interested in protecting them and putting out their favored point of view than they do in really challenging them and really digging under their responses. Another example of that is just the lack of follow-up questions. We see press conferences in which an official may give an answer that, to those of us in the public, seems obviously unsatisfactory, but instead of saying, well, wait a minute, let me clear that up, what do you mean by that, instead of going back to it, reporters will just move on to a new question as if they don't want to seem argumentative. That's exactly the opposite of the courageous and investigatory attitude that we need reporters, and especially those reporters who are talking to powerful people, to exhibit. The fact that so many Americans, according to polls, believe that Iraq had something to do with the September 11th attacks, of which there's absolutely no evidence, is one of the most depressing things I've heard. But maybe it's just because I'm a media critic, but it really is something where I point to media as the source of that problem. We know that the White House has been aggressively putting out the idea that Iraq was behind September 11th in some way, has some connections to al-Qaeda, so that they can translate people's fears and people's sorrow and people's concern coming out of September 11th and turn that into support for whatever invasive wars they would like to carry on. If media had, instead of simply transmitting what the White House were saying, if they had challenged it, if they had demanded evidence, then I think those poll numbers would be different. People were very frightened and confused after September 11th, and they were looking for answers. The White House was all too happy to provide them. Again, this was a time where media needed to remind themselves, journalists needed to remind themselves that it is not their job to present the White House perspective on issues. It is their job to independently scrutinize that presentation. The failure to give the lie to the story of the connection between Iraq and September 11th is perhaps the most egregious example of that failure. I also think that there was a real tendency to look to grab at any solution. I think you're absolutely right. I think the White House was interested to promote that connection. They didn't have to do it that many times. They didn't need to keep referring to September 11th, but you can keep saying we're invading Iraq for safety, to make us all more secure. You're still evoking that fear that came out of September 11th. Every time they talk about terrorism and how we have to go around the world, you know, nipping that in the bud, it's another way of, even if you don't say it overtly, it's another way of suggesting that somehow these wars of empire, let's call them, like the invasion of Iraq, that somehow they are going to make us safer. I don't blame people for wanting to feel safer and for wanting to believe that their government is in the business of making them safer. Again, that's why journalists had to do the difficult work of showing us that it is simply not the case that we are going to become safer from terrorist attacks by invading other countries. I think it's absolutely right, and one of the most depressing features of our democracy. We have seen that politicians' first interest is in getting reelected, and, you know, actually responding to either what their constituents might be saying directly, a mass of their constituents, or staking out their own point of view based on their own beliefs is something that not a lot of our elected officials seem to have the backbone to do. Some folks have said it more overtly, that they simply believe they need to get back in office. But, you know, we don't send folks to Congress so that they can stay in Congress and have a nice job for many years. Their job is to represent us. And it's been disheartening because I know that a lot of folks who are opposed to the invasion of Iraq did communicate with their Congress people, did call them, did send them letters. And nevertheless, the majority of, I'm thinking of Democrats at this point, nevertheless, we saw so much support for the war in Congress. And I think that also was a fear of appearing unpatriotic, a fear of even less than that, even more low than that, a fear of backing the wrong horse, you know, a feeling that we were going to invade Iraq anyway, and they just wanted to come out on the right side of it and not seem to be losers after the end of that. This is the opposite of the democratic principles that we hope that our elected officials will be operating on. Absolutely. This, we've seen, you know, political advertising and campaigning get very low and very sleazy and really more negative than positive. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. And I think that encourages a, let me just call it, cowardice on the part of elected officials who really want to, rather than saying precisely what they believe, rather than standing on principle, again, it goes back to wanting to get reelected. So you don't want to say anything that someone can, you know, take out of context and turn against you. That, to me, is, again, a lack of bravery, a lack of confidence, and a lack of belief in the people. One of the things that FAIR has tracked for years is the real failure of public broadcasting, both on television and in radio, to really serve as a true alternative to commercial broadcasting. I think it's one of the things we get the most calls about, NPR is at FAIR, because people have higher expectations for it. They expect more from it, and they're disappointed time and again. Just as with corporate media, some of the reasons for the narrowness of debate on NPR, they're really the same. It has to do with having to please corporate underwriters. They don't call them sponsors, they call them underwriters. It amounts to the same thing. If you're getting ExxonMobil to sponsor your programming, then you're very aware that you're not going to have content in that programming that they're not going to like. So there's that. But I think there's something else with NPR, which is unfortunate, a desire not to be seen as liberal. The NPR wants very much to see itself as mainstream. Unfortunately, that winds up with them having the same sources, the same voices, and the same perspectives that we get on corporate media. So it's really not serving the function that it's intended to serve.
Well, Janine Jackson of Counterspin, it's been an honor to speak to you, and again, we appreciate you so much, the work you do.
Thank you very much, Jim Turr.
This has been Jim Turr reporting from the Taos Talking Picture Festival.